Donda, Donda, Donda.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your Talk to Me Nicely, Don't Come at Me Loud of music, news, and criticism. I am your host, John Caramonica.
Donda.
It's Donda season. It's not Donda day or week. If you've been paying attention for the last several weeks, it is indeed Donda season. Kanye put out his 10th album. It is, I think, the biggest album release of the year from a consumption perspective. If you would have said 3 months ago that Kanye was going to go essentially from ice cold to the number one album in the country, that would have been a challenging proposition to think about. But here we are. Kanye has done a series of stadium events, listening sessions, come theatrical performances. He made music in the basement of Mercedes-Benz Stadium. He flew the locks in on a private jet. He wore a jacket that had spikes to repel bears. He built a house in the center of Soldier Field and set it on quasi-fire and then walked off with Kim wearing a wedding dress. The symbology is all over the place. We're going to talk about all of it on this week's episode. I was glad a couple weeks ago that we got to talk to Rachel and Steph about the style. Now we're going to talk about the music, the rollout, the bigger picture of Kanye and how he functions in pop culture right now. First, Daytwan Thomas is going to call in. Daytwan is the editor of Vibe. Daytwan and I go back a very long way. And we're going to talk about regarding and absorbing Kanye over the years and how it differs now, or maybe doesn't differ, probably doesn't differ, than it did 5, 10, 15, even 20 years ago. And then the boy Justin Charity is going to call in. Justin just wrote a piece basically saying Kanye's been telling y'all all along who he is, but now you're different. He's not. And that's an important point. And I wanted to spend a little time with Justin talking through that. So before we get to Justin, Daytwan Thomas is here. Day has been writing basically as long as I've been writing and editing as long as I've been in the game. So Day currently is the editor-in-chief of Vibe. Also consults and produces on award shows like the Billboard Awards and the AMAs. But most crucially, Daytwan sees the big picture. So, Day, hello. I know you're trapped at a hotel in LA right now.
Yes, I am.
Your flights were canceled. So this is a minor gift of Hurricane Ida. But Day, I know that we chatted a little bit already about what it means to assess the work of Kanye West. But I wonder, before we get into Donda kind of specifics, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what it's like at your age and your stage of career viewing how he's moving in the world right now, and what it's like to see how maybe other folks, younger folks, people with less historical perspective, how they perceive it. What kind of difference or gap do you see there?
Well, first and foremost, thanks for having me, man. You know, I'm a big fan of yours. Every time you drop something, I'm like, damn, he got it right. There's no window to do this story now.
Oh, man. I'm glad Caramonica. I got a glass of water before this.
Yes, indeed, man. Yes, indeed. So I appreciate
Bless you, man.
Having me here. I would say this about just first the arc that I've seen with Kanye's career. And it's really not an arc. It's really a roller coaster kind of.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's not an arc.
It's an EKG.
It's an EKG.
Big facts.
That's what it is. And I've seen him since the beginning of the days of him working with Derek D. Dot, Angeletti, you know, a little bit post-Hitman era when he was kind of like his mentor. We all, of course, found out later that No ID was like the true mentor in respect of like the Chicago connection.
Right. Those late 90s, early 2000s, like pre-college dropout.
Exactly. Those grind years. And I really got to know him as he was about to approach Rockefeller, like as everything was going with that. And that guy from back then is this guy now with Scrooge McDuck money. You feel me, John? Like he finally has the money to be able to do the things that's in his head. And what people are seeing, which I love actually, is Kanye thinks, reacts, moves in real time. I think people think it's some big strategy and here's the rollout, da da da. No, it's today I want to build my old house in Soldier Field and set it on fire. Why I can't set it on fire? I'm going to set something on fire. You know what I'm saying?
So absolutely.
That's the guy that we're seeing create sneaker empires, clothing empires, visual effect empires. We're not even talking about music yet. We're talking about political movements. It might be the birthday party, but it's a party. You know what I'm saying? This is the person that we've seen misstep so many times. And it's like, oh, the misstep is part of the journey.
Okay, so two things on that. One, I'm almost certain that the entire Chicago Soldier Field thing, which I did go to, was pulled together in approximately a week, maybe less.
Oh, maybe less, maybe even less. I really do feel that.
And when you see the scale, the number of bodies that had to be moved, the number of cars, the number of special effects, the amount of building, look, maybe it's 10 days tops. Maybe. I mean, I haven't gone back and checked all the early Instagram posts about it, but I think it's between 7, maybe 8 days. So that is stunning. That is a stunning. At that pace, Yeezy should like organize the Olympics. You know what I mean? Like they literally spend like 7 years planning the Olympics.
Yes, they do.
Kanye's basically like, no, we can do that in about 3 months. If you just let us do it. We could do
it. Just let us get it. Just let us get it. But John, it's the money. It's the money now. It's the access to capital. And he's never used that as an excuse to do even huger things back in the day. He just found a way to make it happen. Now he just makes it happen because it's there for him. And that makes it easier and it makes it even more rambunctious and explosive and culture shifting every time.
And also there's this kind of tension between the discourse around Kanye West, which is Kanye is problematic. Kanye does things that should be frowned upon. And to be fair, there are certainly things that Kanye has done or causes that he has embraced that have given me tremendous discomfort. So I get that. But also that discourse is not at all connected to the fundamental on the ground reality, which is that there are people, maybe not hundreds of thousands of people, but there's dozens or hundreds of people who work for and with him who are down to execute this vision. And then there are, in fact, tens, hundreds of thousands, potentially millions of people who are curious and want to see what the results are. And that's why when people start talking about these kind of easy discourses about removing people from the conversation or putting people aside or cancellation or whatever term you want to use, Kanye is maybe the first person, not the only person, but the first person to fundamentally disprove that that's a real in the world thing. Because he's going to move how he wants to move.
The only way you could truly cancel, I feel, is if the person really starts to diminish in their talent or the passion isn't there anymore. So now, not only do you have whatever situation that made it scandalous for them to get into the cancel culture box, it's also like, and they whack. You know what I'm saying?
So we don't even need to pay attention to them because they trash anyway.
They're trash anyway. But what he does is he innovates a lot of times against people's better judgment and critiquing skills. They dislike him and want him to lose so much that I think sometimes what they do is they'll harp on this isn't as good as something. But is it whack? Or have you not evolved enough in your assertion of this is some different shit I've never heard before. I've never heard gospel, hip hop, trap, gangster, all mashed together. When do you hear that at such a high level?
The friction is part of the entertainment at this point.
Yes.
I was talking to my buddy Andrew Barber, who runs Fake Short Drive, mm-hmm. the big Chicago.
That's my guy.
Yeah, yes. Right? I was talking to Andrew, and he mapped it out. He just said, are you not entertained? And it's like, what else can you say? That is the core essence of it. Also, I was thinking about this. So I'm in Chicago, right? I'm watching this spectacle unfold. And of course, I've never seen anything like this. In many ways, I was kind of like, oh, this is how I know COVID's over, even though COVID's not over. But I was like, because here we are. I flew to another city to watch this thing, like literally piece together with spit and paste, just like I would have 4 years ago. You know, yep. Like I was like,
I've
okay,
done it.
Right,
done
we're
it.
Back. We're back to this. But I know that there were obviously other artists there. There were artists who were on the porch, and then there are artists in the VIP and watching. And I was thinking about what the Kanye spectacle means to other artists, not simply to fans, but I was thinking about what it means to other artists. And what I'm starting to realize, and I didn't really get into this in my piece because I felt like it wasn't really exactly where my piece was heading, but it's something where my mind was heading, which is that on some level, to assess Donda as an album is incomplete. You're assessing the spectacle. We're assessing the rollout. But there's even a layer beyond that, which is we got to assess what someone like Kanye, coming from where Kanye came from, arriving where he's arrived at, what that person means motivationally to the art form, what that person means motivationally to someone who's 20 or 22, who's starting out and now has a bigger platform to dream about. The existence of Kanye, for all the issues, the existence of what he's been able to achieve, serves as this kind of almost like intangible motivational tool. Look, maybe Donda is a 6 out of 10, maybe it's an 8 out of 10, maybe it's a 10, like who knows? But the fact is, if I was a young artist coming into the game and I saw this, my dreams would be way bigger.
Oh, way bigger, because now my palette is so much more. The platforms are so much more. We saw the peak of this, like a little sliver of this when he did Pablo at MSG. You got to remember, my first listening session for a Kanye incomplete album was, it wasn't even complete yet. It wasn't, he didn't even have all the songs for a College Dropout yet, was outside of the Soho House in Meatpacking, and he has his G500 with the door open blasting All Falls Down with the Lauryn Hill version. He's blasting it. It's unmixed, so you know the trouble is all out of control. He's waking up people. They called the cops on us, like, to move us. That's how I heard a Kanye album. And then it evolved into going to the biggest studios. It evolved into going to his house. It evolved into, like, he's on MTV. And then to MSG. Now, to take over and have people fly from all over the place to see the spectacle. Now it's a performance art. It's not even, hey, I'm going to play the album in this huge arena. Now it's theater. Now it's like, hey, we have a look. We have uniforms. We have, oh, look at the Jeeps and the people and everything is moving. And I'm like, you're right, John. It's more of the spectacle and how he's presenting it. He's doing it at such a big level. If I'm a young artist, I'm like, I got to rethink my ish. If I care.
Let's listen to a little bit of God Breathed, because I think that's an epic scale, theatrical scale moment on this album.
More than I can say for you, before the sons and the daughters, before the sun and the water, more than I can say for you, but the truth's still for you. Once I saw what the Lord do, God the Son, all the glory, God the Father like Maury, don't care what you say, nothing on me, I don't care about the lawyer fees, I don't care about your loyalties.
We think about Kanye as an influence and a force who has shaped a lot of what's happened in the last 10 or 15 years musically. But when Kanye was coming into the game in the early to mid 2000s, really the biggest you could dream officially was Jay. That's like officially the biggest you can dream. But Kanye was like, no, we have much, much bigger ambitions, which is why if you read those early interviews, including one that I did at a College Dropout era, you read those interviews, you're like, man, this man was off. He was on one and off one at the same time.
At the same time. He knew. He saw this. He saw this then.
And this is the funny thing. I went back. So I've been blessed to interview Ye 5 times, right?
Nice.
Very big, genuinely blessed. If you go back to the interview that I did, College Dropout era, and just replace the proper nouns, you know, replace the album titles, replace the whatever, you know, just the proper nouns. He could have given that interview this week.
And that's the thing that we get to look at and say as journalists and people that have been close to him in this journey, we're able to say like, yo, he was actually being held back then. And I know I mentioned the money, but I also think about the limitations of and the frustrations of him saying like, dad, this isn't ready for the technology or the platforms aren't ready for what I want to do. It's almost like a tech giant saying like, dag, man, I need more code. What's the new code so I can do this new idea? And that's what he's doing visually. You know, he's taking all the things that he's been influenced by from all over the world and putting it into these projects, man. And it's masterful to see, man.
Tell me about your cold experience of Donda, like the album. Like, let's pretend there is no extra stuff, right? There's no listening, da, da, da. To the degree that you can process Donda on its own, how did it kind of strike you? And where in the kind of arc, or not arc, as say EKG, where in the EKG did it sort of land for you?
Well, my first listen for it happened in the airport. It dropped while I was in the airport.
Yeah, drop while I was in a car. I was like, come on.
Yeah, like, just exactly. Yeah. I was in the San Francisco airport coming to LA, and I was like, oh, this is the perfect short trip to listen to this hour and 45 minute album. And on first listen, I was like, okay, it's a harder version of Jesus is King.
Mm, that's right.
That's what I took.
It's Jesus is King wearing a Yeezus jacket.
There you go. There you go. And he wanted to add some fire to it. It doesn't have as big of choruses and that like that black church feel, like kind of like Jesus King had. He kind of like put a little pop spin to gospel. And this, he put kind of like a trap, Kid Cudi, big scape sound to it. And when I listen to joints like Moon, it feels like I'm in space. If you listen to it on a really good system, some really good earphones, he takes you to space with these emotions that he's been going through since the last, I think it skips Jesus is King, and it draws a lot from 808 and Heartbreaks.
I'd say if I have any frustration with the record, if you were to listen to the record top to bottom and only listen to what he's saying, don't listen to production, don't listen to the guests, you literally just listen to the yay words. I feel like he's not at his peak, except in a couple places. But what he does do, you know, it's him as executive producer, right? It's him as conductor, because he's not doing a lot of the board work. He's bringing people in and mixing and matching stuff. What he achieves on this record with texture and kind of like the fiber of the production, that to me is where a lot of the emotion comes from. He's embedding the emotional narrative into the production.
Instrument. He's an instrument in this.
That's exactly how it feels. And so like the part of me that's like, got, you know, damn, yeah, you used to really get bars off. That part of me is a little like, I don't know. But in terms of like, is there a coherent sonic emotional idea at play here? Yes. The answer is yes.
I think the reason why I'm not disappointed in the album like so many others that love Ye is because I didn't expect the heavy bars. I feel like he's in a place now where he's substituted having to prove that he's ill on the mic or with these lines or getting help or whatever to like, I'm going to let the emotional aspect grasp everyone because I'm in an emotionally unstable place. But I'm getting to a better place because of my relationship with God. So God is going to ground me. I'm going to use God's energy to get me through on my creative energy. Whereas before, and this sounds crazy, I'm going to use the competitive spirit of the rap game to help bar up so I can just bar everyone up. The only thing that he still has that's a competitive flame is Drake. Drake is his only competitive flame, and that's more personal than it is really business and being better than him. It's more of a respect thing. So there's no one better. That it's almost like he used the industry before as fuel to go and prove something. Now he wants to prove something to Drake. And that's crazy. That shows you how powerful Drake is.
Drake, you know, literally, it's like your wayward child. You know, it's Kanye's yeah. wayward child, right? It's like who can take you out but your son?
It's so wild, man. It's like an episode of Power.
It really. Let's listen to Jesus Lord, because I think this touches on some of what you're talking about. Actually, kind of covers both of the points we're talking about.
Tell me if you know someone that needs. We've been through a lot of things. Tell me if you know someone.
that needs.
When you see the kind of blowback to individual moments in this Kanye rollout, like obviously, like, you know, you bring Marilyn Manson out on stage. Marilyn Manson's got like 4 sexual abuse lawsuits pending against him. Even the biggest Kanye apologist has got to be a little like, could have sat that one out. You know what I mean? Like, that's not necessary. So when you see, number one, when you see Ye doing something like that, how does it strike you? And then when you see the pushback to something like that, it does make me realize like the 2021 is very different from 2005 or 2010 or 2015 in terms of public discourse. How do you navigate that space?
It was wild to see Marilyn Manson up there at first, and I totally forgot about the allegations. So I was more shocked that the baby was up there with the new verse.
Because it's fresh.
Yeah, and it was a song that Jay was on. So I was like, oh, the baby gets a joint with Jay. And I didn't hear Jay's verse. So I'm not really concentrated on Marilyn Manson. Then after everything, I started getting texts and stuff like, how could he bring Marilyn? I said, oh, dip. He does have those allegations. However, what I'm thinking, I'm trying to think like Kanye, crazy of me, right? I'm like, oh, he wants to show.
Good luck.
Right, exactly. I don't exactly.
You and me both, bro. Me and you, me both.
For real. I'm thinking he's doing that to show, all right, the baby is going through a tough time in these allegations and things that he made a mistake in. I'm going to support him because I've been there. I've said things that were off the cuff and I didn't think it all the way through and I've been wrong. With Marilyn Manson, it's a little different. The connection to him is different. And not only for shock value, I think Ye legitimately wants to say people like him need to be seen and have second chances as well. I've had second and third and fourth chances, but his is a little bit more so. So that's the aspect that I'm thinking of, even though, you know, he could have sat that one out.
Yes, I agree. When I talked to Ye in the Wyoming era, so 2017 or whatever, you know, he was already thinking about cancellation and second chances and understanding that when you have a love for an individual and that individual makes a bad choice or does a bad thing, you can condemn the action but not condemn the person. That then, to me, like, again, trying to think like Ye, that's a pretty clean line from that thinking to Christian forgiveness and the idea that someone can be rehabilitated. That's how that feels to me. It does feel like this expression of it by being like, I'm going to take a guy who has these charges and I'm just going to put him on my stage. That did feel like a little, you know, it does feel like a bridge too far. The baby thing, I think you're totally right. Because again, who has said more off the cuff, erratic, sometimes problematic things than Ye? As far as the baby goes, like, look, I'm not co-signing what the baby said, but also is very, very telling to see, and again, forgive me for saying this, but like all the largely white people who were like quick to embrace the baby to kind of get a piece of the clout, all of a sudden just be like, oh, no. You know, we're cutting ties. The hypocrisy embedded in those choices was also loud. It was as loud to me as him saying a thing that he should not have said.
It shows you Kanye's position in pop culture to the point where he didn't say, I'm endorsing Marilyn Manson. He didn't say, forget what he did. He didn't say anything. He just put him there. And that was enough to start the conversations that we're having now about what's acceptable when someone's under fire, when they have these huge allegations. We saw what happened with Cuomo. That's like if, I don't know, Eric Adams, I hate to say, but if Eric Adams brought Cuomo out and said, this is still my man, regardless of what, would he be wrong? Would he be right? He's trying to gain the trust of the people. Kanye doesn't necessarily care about the trust of the people because he's like, this place is full. All the tickets are sold. Y'all made me $7 million. So whatever I feel will be critiqued, but I know what I feel. And going back to the Donda theme, it was so amazing that he's been able to put his mom's voice talking about the fearlessness that her son has, that she instilled in him. And she says that one part where she's like, he said, I can say whatever I want. I'm paraphrasing. You know, that's dangerous since I'm his mother and you know him. You know, he says whatever you want. And I'm the one that helped get him to that point, good, bad, or indifferent. So he's going to always be that. It's just that situation is a little bit more murkier than we would have liked.
Maybe I feel this way because I'm a little bit older and I wonder how this strikes you. I don't feel like we grew up in an era of uncomplicated celebrity. I think we grew up in an era of complicated celebrity.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I think there's been a move, especially in the last like 5 to 10 years, to privilege uncomplicated celebrities who then walk this like very, very perilous tightrope, worried about being thrust off the tightrope because of any misstep. I'm not saying that how we grew up was right or how current folks are growing up is right. I'm not making a value judgment on it, but I do think the tolerance for complication and challenge in celebrity is different generationally. And so what I see in Ye is familiar to me from the 80s, from the controversial celebrities of the 80s. That's familiar to me.
Rick James,
you know, Madonna.
Mike Tyson, Madonna.
Yeah. Yeah, and like not that people shouldn't have been X'd out of the paint for bad things that they did in the 80s and they just weren't. It's like, yes, maybe it was too permissive, but when it shapes how a generation views celebrity, and Kanye is in our age group, you know, that's the type of celebrity he was raised on as well.
And think about the level of celebrity that he's attached to just in marriage. Just that level of celebrity is almost like unheard of to have these two people be this big. Let's think of the biggest music celebrity you could ever think of in Michael Jackson. His wives weren't anywhere near as big as him as far as popularity or
even public facing. They really weren't public facing apart from, did he marry Priscilla Presley or did they just date?
He did.
They, yeah. So apart from her,
she was a little bit more, but I mean, even then, you know what I mean?
No, so, it's like 100 versus 1, you know, it's like right. The scale is totally out of whack.
What I said in a piece I wrote like maybe 2 weeks ago, he's operating in a stratosphere that we can't necessarily see. So to understand what his thought process is, it's like trying to figure out why the pyramids are here, why the stars are here. It's like he's dealing on a level that we haven't really studied yet with that level of talent and then that level of fearlessness and then the acceptance. Jay-Z brought him back. When does Jay-Z bring you back? If he cuts you the tie, the
it's
tie
over.
Usually cut.
It's over. It's over.
You know what I'm saying? It's like you don't necessarily, he'll be cordial, you know, but now he's saying like, when I touch road, I'm going back with your son talking to Donda. Like he understands, okay, this guy is different and he treats him as a brother. So that speaks a lot as well. Like who would speak on your behalf when you're going through things publicly?
And the thing about Kanye, there's this persistent, because he's always going through things publicly. It does test his relationships.
Oh, yeah.
We know that publicly, and I certainly know that privately. You know, it's like
even his personal ones. With
yeah, like, oh, absolutely. That's what Cuddy, I mean.
think about Cuddy. Him and Cuddy had to make up during Pablo sessions, right? I believe it was like in front of everybody. Him and Consequence, they went at it. Him and Cameron, like Kanye has gone through it with some of the closest and most collaborative people he's been with, even his own personal team, and everyone brings him back.
To circle back to what we were saying earlier, I've been thinking about that specific thing that you just mentioned. I've been thinking about that a lot the last 24 hours. And I really think if you had a problematic member of your family, but for whatever reason, that member of your family was the one who allowed you to dream, who allowed you ambition, who allowed you a playing field upon which you could be whoever you truly felt you wanted to be or could be, you might forgive more than you'd forgive with just cousin Frankie, who's just like, you know, you hang out and watch baseball games with.
The ties that bond are stronger.
That's how I feel. And I feel like these folks, Kanye is like a friend, maybe a brother, but really a conduit to some kind of like other artistic space, other creative, intellectual, spiritual space. And it's hard to let go of that. It's hard to be cut off from that. And then when the opportunity presents itself to go back to it, it's hard to let go. It's hard not to take that chance. And I think that's why when I say Kanye's primary function right now might be motivation. Like, I'm not sure if people will remember Donda the album 5 to 10 years from now. I don't know. There are songs on here that I think are great. And there are songs I think are mid. I don't know if that's what people are going to take away from this. I think what people are going to take away from this, they're going to be like, huh, in a 6-week period, this man went from ice cold, couldn't be colder, to having the number one album in the country and had 3 stadium presentations along the way, all invented from whole cloth.
And you know what's so funny? When you said the word stadium, it made me think of something. Everyone says that they want like these stadium anthems because I want to play this in a stadium. This is so far away from stadium anthems. So like, you know, in the traditional sense, he broke the mold again. It's like, this isn't even a stadium album, but I'm going to perform them in stadiums. Was that because of COVID? Was that because it's that huge? It's not an arena. Regardless of what it is, he deems his music ready for any platform. There's literally the term stadium anthem. Come on, he's playing records that are like Sunday late, it's raining, and you want to get closer to whatever spirit you have within you. You know, on certain areas, that feels like the through line for the album, because it is, I think a lot of it, we forget in the spectacle of it all, the name is Donda. It's grounded in his mom's energy.
Is there a song specifically that sticks with you?
Oh, yeah.
After a few listens?
Moon, Jesus is Lord, the joint with Favio. I thought he just...
Oh, yeah. Let's listen to specifically the Favio verse. Yeah, look, when I was in jail, I was low-key. Shout out to supporters that wrote me. Eat food, work out, and go sleep. You know I'm praying he carrying both feet. Yeah. We got God with us. He look at me and see a God figure. And when I stop vibing, I know that he with me, and I'ma always catch the heart shiver. I know his demons in that dark liquor. We buy a bottle with squash, push up everybody, turn into a horse. This is a great example of what I'm talking about. If you and I had had a conversation 6 months ago, and I said to you, the person who's going to have the best verse on an upcoming Kanye West album is Favio Foreign.
I would be like, yo, John, man, I think you need a nice little break. Ooh. Just a cool, nice little break, man. You're doing a lot right now. I haven't had my Twitter in so long. It got hacked. It was crazy. I finally get my Twitter back like 2 weeks ago or whatever. One of the first things that happens when Donda dropped, I hear the album and I tweeted like, yo, this is in contention for verse of the year with Favio, or I'm just that shocked that this kid could rap like this. He doesn't sound high. He doesn't sound drunk. He's not speaking about super killing and being a gangster or whatever. He's speaking about his life in the way that someone might go to a therapist and say, tell me about yourself.
And this is why when I talk about Kanye as a conduit, who else? Name one other artist's album that Favio Foreign shows up on and Favio does what he does on Off the Grid. Name any other artist that could happen with.
The only thing that was a hint, a little hint, and it's not because of this style, was him on King's Disease on Spicy with Nas. And I was like, ooh, Nas got Favio to open up a little bit. Not open up as far as like be emotional or anything like that, but just style-wise, I kind of felt it. But it was still very much that young...
Punchy drill bluster.
Yeah, exactly. This right here is, I'm a different artist under the direction of someone that knows what they're doing.
A few weeks ago on podcast, I was talking about the Versus, and I was talking about having a winner's mindset, which I sound like Khaled, but I'm just right. Talking about a winner's mindset. This is like something parallel to that. This is like, do you dare to dream? Do you dare to imagine yourself in a circumstance grander than the circumstance that you have historically known yourself in and which others historically associate you with? Do you dare to dream? That maybe is a lot of language to say, yo, Favio snapped, but Favio snapped. And I think it's telling that he snapped in this context.
Oof, he knew the moment. He understood the assignment. When I tweeted that, a lot of people were agreeing with me, but there's always that one person that doesn't agree with you that sticks with you. And this one guy was like, Fabio Foreign, verse of the year, you snitch me in all caps. And I knew what he meant by that. Like, no, you're bugging. And then when I went back, I was like, let me listen to it a couple more times. I did. And then I let the album go. And I was like, damn, Jay Electronica got a master verse on here. But I'm still gravitating towards Fabio because it's such a curveball.
And it's so emotional. It's so emotional
and so telling that I wouldn't think a drill rapper could do that. And I'm excited for where he can take this platform. Just was on Nas's album. Now you're on Ye's album. Whose album you're going to do next? I hope it's yours. And he keeps it on that platform.
And you bring it. Right? You carry this with you. And that's the thing. The Jay Elect verse is great, but it's a Jay Elect verse. You know, like if you drop that exact verse onto a, I don't know, a Gunna record, if you dropped it onto a West Side Gun record, it'd be the same. It'd be exactly as it is.
And because we expect that from
it's exactly Jay. What he does.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, man. So like we were saying, we don't know 5 years from now, people are going to remember Donda the Record or Donda the Spectacle. To the degree that you have a vision of where you think Kanye himself goes. You see, to me, look, you know, I'm writing this book. People ask me, what do I think he's going to do? Where do I think he's going to go? And it's interesting because I think even as recently as 3 years ago, I felt like, to the degree that it was an arc, not an EKG, to the degree it was an arc, it was clearly in decline. And that's not to say it was bad. It's just like, you know, people are popping and then they fade and it happens. It's not a big deal.
Yep. Times change.
But after this last 2 months, I don't think it's going to fade. It's going to be different. It's going to evolve, but I don't think it's going to fade. Is that how it strikes you?
Very much. I think it's an evolving thing, and it's evolving into a place where we didn't see going. We didn't necessarily see him get to a place where it's like he was going to embrace spirituality in the way of Christianity and in his music and infuse it so much. But we knew that because of Jesus Walks. He's always spoken about it throughout all of his music. But to fully embrace it to the point where even the artists that are featured on this album, I think they had a guideline of like, you know, can you stay within this barrier right here in this love chamber? Can you stay within this? You could be hard as you want, but just kind of stay within this and still make it work. Because that was my thing. I thought we were going to get a Jesus is King 2. That's what I thought Donda was going to be. And we didn't. We got like a mix of emotional trap. And then the features on here, you didn't have features, I think, on Jesus is King like that. Not to this level. He just wanted to get that out as a creative vehicle. But this one, he was like, yo, I'm back, y'all. Let's go. And he made it in real time. Once again, the Locks, they just won the Verses and he flew them down.
It's like, you remember, and maybe they still do this. I don't really watch sports much anymore. But, you know, you win the Super Bowl, you got to do the Disney World commercial.
Yes, they still do it.
Okay. This was the Disney World for winning Verses.
Yes. Because
this is the Disney World.
If
this
would have won, they would have been in that.
They would have been on that plane. That plane had room for one crew.
That's it. That's it. Whoever won, man. And it's like, what are you doing? Jadakiss, you just scored the most points and bars in MSG history. What are you doing after the Verses win? I'm going to Donda's. I'm going to the stadium.
I'm going to the basement of Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
I'm going to the Donda session. Woo. That's wild, man. It's wild to think. And it shows you that he's still in tune and on post and like, okay, I want to be in the moment. If people don't realize that that's what these rollouts are and how everything is coming together,
yes.
Just look at how he's making the music.
I said this in my piece. I was like, this is an album, but it is a historical marker. It is a marker of the time period. Like the Locks thing is a marker of time. The Baby thing is a marker of time.
Yeah, yeah. He's checking off boxes. Since so much has happened since he did the first one, I think the biggest surprise, though, clearly, was Jay. When you first heard those first couple of words, when Jay came on, Jay, on that first session, I was in Houston at the time. And I'm like, wait, is that Jay? Because I could barely hear it. I was like, yo, they're back. It was such a like euphoric feeling because we all love them as the Throne. We love them as Rockefeller. We love them as brothers and seeing them, that MTV moment when Beyonce reveals that she's having Blue, and Kanye is like shaking Jay. Like, that's a brotherhood thing, and we miss that, you know? And to be able to hear those couple of lines come from Jay on that record, I think that's the biggest thing. That probably gets lost in all this, but it was, to me, it's the biggest thing.
I think also generationally, it's just more meaningful if you're like over 30, you know what I mean? I'm never not going to be over 30. So here we are. Day, what a pleasure, man. This is a gift to have you here to chop game on this. It's frictive stuff. It's fractious stuff. But it's also, as we've seen in the last 5-6 days, it's vital. It's vital stuff. And we gotta treat it in that way. Yeah, that's how it feels to me.
Let's see what happens with this Certified Lover Boy. Let's see what goes.
Oh, yeah. No, this isn't over.
This isn't over. This is a to be continued.
That's the other thing, which I didn't mention in my piece, but I had a paragraph at one point where I was basically like, what's going to happen tomorrow, the day after you read this piece, is probably going to be as important than as anything I'm writing about. So
exactly, man. I appreciate you, man.
Yo, a pleasure, man.
Thank you, bro.
I'm Jane Costin, host of The Argument, a podcast from New York Times Opinion. I've spent years as a reporter, talking to people from across the political spectrum. I've heard a lot of arguments, too, in person and online. Some are baseless and mean, but some have made me think differently or helped me understand other people's points of view. And that's what The Argument is about. Each week on the show, you'll hear people who disagree with each other. Respectful, civil debate that gets behind the big news stories and beyond party lines. Like, how to reform policing in America, whether we should cancel student debt, raise the minimum wage, or kill the filibuster. You might not agree with everything you hear, and that's the point. You might even walk away with some new opinions of your own. You can listen to new episodes of The Argument every Wednesday, wherever you're listening to this podcast.
Okay, we're back. Segment two. The Young King, Justin Charity, just dropped this piece about this is the Kanye we've always had. This is a great piece. I'm glad you recycled this from the Yeezus era. Thank you so much for dropping this. It's a very timely piece.
Listen,
Justin. Okay, let's just be honest. Mostly I think your piece, I think you're dead on, but the piece really can just stop at the headline. That's the essential thing that I find myself asking every time that there's an outrage cycle of any kind around Ye, is I'm just like, did we just get deep cryo unfrozen? You know what I mean? Like, have we not been here for the last 20 years witnessing versions of this exact same thing? I assume that's got to be what was on your mind watching all this unfold.
Yeah. And you know what it is? It's that it's so distilled on College Dropout, right? Like, everything people say, I think, most passionately about Kanye West now. It's not even just that you can say, did you listen to College Dropout? It's like, they're two songs, Jesus Walks and New Workout Plan. Everything you hate about Kanye now was like on those songs.
Was there.
Right? Was there. The entire time it's been there.
Do you find it possible to listen to Donda in any kind of like pure, clear way? And if so, where do you feel it sits with his catalog?
So I find it really challenging. I'll be totally honest about that, right? I think more than the average pop artist at the moment, it is, even for me, even as somebody who really doesn't hold a lot of the things that I think other people hold against Kanye, even I find it challenging. And I'm not in New York anymore. I'm in my own private Montana. You know, I'm in Wisconsin now, right? It's like, and the album came out. I was driving around. I was in a mall parking lot. I just put the album on, and I was trying to be sort of self-conscious about like what expectations am I bringing to this, given the rollout, given everything, all the consternation about Kanye in the past 5 years, right? And you know what? Those first few listens, I couldn't really break out of that headspace of get the F out of here. You know what I mean? I think as I spend more time with it, I find my guard dropping a little bit, and I find myself more and more able and more sort of eager, frankly, to latch on to specific songs like Believe What I Say and 24 and Moon and Heaven and Hell, right? And really sit with them and situate them in a way that's maybe less reactive But it's hard. It's definitely hard. I don't know. Is it hard for you?
It is hard for me, but I think the way that I adjust for it is I do think that my understanding of yay, and I think this is something I've thought about a lot, probably since the Pablo era, is if he's going to de-emphasize music making, I too should de-emphasize music absorption in terms of thinking about Kanye. Now, obviously, I have a job to think about Kanye like in a broader, more holistic way, whether it's for day job or book stuff. Like, that's part of the thing. But I think, like, especially during those Wyoming sessions where people are like, man, these records are rushed. They're really, like, fat. And it's like, yeah, they're not as good as Graduation or whatever. You know, it's like they're not as good as Fantasy. Like, yes, I agree with all of that. But also, it's like he's only spending 2 weeks or 4 weeks making a record, whereas he used to spend 6 months making a record. And so I think his relationship to music making and what percent of his life it kind of occupies, when I see that, it makes me feel slightly differently about these records. And also, to be frank, living in the hip hop ecosystem of the last few years, whether it's SoundCloud rap or Atlanta stuff or whatever, where people are just drizzling stuff out constantly, it's not overly produced, it's fast, it's a little bit gritty, and it's just, it's urgent and it happens in real time. What Ye's doing is actually weirdly not that inconsistent with what's happening in much of the rest of the genre, even if he's doing it for different reasons.
Can I just cut back, though, to the first point you made in this, yeah, right? Which is, if Kanye is going to de-emphasize music or clutter it with all this other extracurricular stuff, then inevitably I'm going to do that too. I think that's the thing that makes this back and forth between his fans and his critics being disillusioned fans in a lot of cases, right? Really, really
critics are fans. Critics are fans. Like, that's, and I mean that not in professional music critics. I mean, people who are critical are functioning as disappointed fans, I often think.
Right. But it's frustrating because it, to me, it'd be one thing if people were being aggy and uncharitable about Kanye West, and this was just a thing that's happening to him. But instead, it's Kanye full-on Riddler mode, right? Going out of his way to shroud his music in certain kinds of presumptions and expectations and distraction. And then his fans turn around and start blaming critics for, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, well, this is like, no one is innocent here, right? Like, Kanye is doing a lot of this stuff and he's soliciting these kinds of attention. Like, trust me, I, and I think lots of other critics, would love nothing more than to live in a world in which we could just sort of be pitched this music, that these albums could be rolled out as just albums, right? As just music. I think at this point, we would love to live in a context where there was a lot less context for Kanye West.
Of course. Of course. And I think, and I understand why that is a mountain too high to climb for very many people. I absolutely understand that. I think if you're not climbing that mountain or trying to, then you're not seeing the fullness of what he does, for better or worse. I'm not saying you climb that mountain and everything is revealed. I'm just saying you climb that mountain because that's where you get the best viewpoint. That's all. So do you feel like 6 months from now or a year from now, we talking about the album? We talking about the spectacle? Or are we not talking about it at all?
I think this is almost the inverse of the life of Pablo. I think 10 years from now, we are talking about the music. I think 10 years from now,
interesting.
I think a lot of the music on this album, I don't like to do that kind of prognostication, but I, again, this is an album where already, right, it's been out for what, a week? And I'm having the opposite experience I had with Pablo, where the more I sip these songs, the more I'm, again, I feel my guard dropping. Whereas with Pablo, the experience was like, again, I remember that Madison Square Garden listening session and being drunk and eating chicken, being like, "What? This is the greatest experience of my life." And I think very quickly, sort of re-listening to that album as it finally was released and being like, "I don't know, man."
Really?
Like, yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. I did not have that experience with Pablo. Pablo still holds up to me.
All that like syrupy, sludgy R&B in the middle, all the sort of stunt rapping about the Bill Cosby, like, I'm a run the whole election. Hey, yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of stuff on that, like the designer stuff on Pablo. That stuff, I think that album more than any other Kanye album to me strikes me as the most you had to be there.
Oh my God, really? Yeah. See, I feel that way about like Ye and Kids See Ghosts. I don't really feel that so much about Pablo, but I understand, because I think really Pablo was the test case for everything we're seeing now. I mean, I literally wrote a whole ass article about I was like, this man is changing songs. You know what I mean? Like that merited an entire article in the year 2016, separate from the review of the album. You know what I mean? Like that was like 3 days later. I was like, huh, this is weird. We should probably write about this. And now not only is the very notion of the album as a concept in flux for Kanye, I didn't even get to talk about the stem player, where he's just basically like, here, have all the stems, make whatever damn album you want. Talk about flux. I didn't even get to that in the piece. But also just the idea that people might change songs or evolve their presentations on streaming services, that's sort of quasi-normalized now. Like you actually saw it with The Baby, where people are like, oh, now I don't claim this remix that I did with The Baby. I deny it. I'm deleting it from the internet. It doesn't exist anymore. And I don't think you get to that point as quickly as you do if Kanye doesn't do what he did with Pablo.
Sure. But I think even there, a lot of the things you just said are commercial arguments. And again, it's the sort of conundrum of Kanye West is that with each album in his discography, I feel like we're more and more sort of having to make these observations about how what he's doing is interesting sartorially, politically, commercially. And he's getting further and further away from the question of, okay, but how much of the music on the life of Pablo is good? You know, and I think Donda is working the same way. I think Ye and Kids See Ghosts work the same way. And that's what kind of bums me out about these rollouts.
If you're viewing Kanye primarily as a musician or a maker of music, then yes. But if you're viewing him as someone who is an attention getter and making music is a component of and also byproduct of that impulse. Now, look, an album's an album. There's no note on Spotify that's like, hey, this person took this album really seriously and therefore so should you, right? And then conversely, this person did not take this album that seriously and therefore neither. But it's like, I don't know, like, you know, like Lil Pump doesn't get a footnote when he just vomited out a couple songs, you know, it's like. But OK, so there's one line in your piece, which I think is really gets at the crux of everything, right? Sure, we can distinguish his musical, sartorial and political phases. Thank you for giving me the blurb for my book. I appreciate that. But in the nearly 18, this actually, this whole thing should be the blur. But in the nearly 18 years since the College Dropout, you've changed far more than he's changed. So here's the question. How have we, the you of this sentence, how have we / you changed?
I mean, I personally have gotten older and less swaggy.
I actually don't agree with that. I think you've gotten more swaggy. You're definitely older, but I think you're more swaggy. But how have the people who you're talking to here, when you say you've changed more than he has, how have those people changed?
That's a bit of artistic license, right? Like, I won't generalize just in the sense that...
No, please generalize.
There's some people who are still rocking with Kanye. They're not tearing themselves up over the ethics of Kanye West music or anything like that, right? But I think what... In large part, a lot of the people who once identified as Kanye fans, who no longer identify as Kanye fans in the same way, at least. Yeah, I think those people have gotten older, right? And I think the most charitable way I'll describe it is, I think I probably around the time of graduation, and certainly by My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, I probably was telling myself, man, Kanye West is really good at getting attention and pissing people off, and that's cool. And I think you get older and you maybe get a bit more sort of anxious about politics and society. And you look at Kanye West, I think, by the time of the life of Pablo, and the stuff that struck you as cool about the ways in which he gets attention start to maybe strike you as dark and a bit dangerous, right? Because to me, I just feel like over time, I'm more and more perceptive of the fact that Kanye... He doesn't just thrive off attention, right? It almost feels like he would shrivel up and die if any one person paid so much as 10% less attention to him. And that's not something you want to really realize about a person. It's the difference between being like, this person is a really great entertainer versus, oh, this person has a very weird postmodern psychological dependency on his relationship with an audience in a way that feels like a really blown up version of really, really toxic narcissism. And that's definitely not how I was thinking about Kanye in 2007.
Okay, but interesting corollary to that. Do you remember in the mid-2000s how older folks, and when I say older folks, I mean older than me, like, you know, like people who are now maybe in their 50s, regarded Kanye with like a lot of wariness?
I barely remember it. You got to recount it. Yeah, I barely.
So I think that that was a thing. And I wonder if part of it was what you're describing experiencing now is like a person approaching or in middle age. I wonder if people who were already approached or in middle age at that point were kind of like, deep sigh, we're not buying this, you know, or more to the point, we don't have to buy this because we're grown.
But can you spell out then for a second what the texture of that argument was then, just so that we're on the same page about it? That, or that the texture of that skepticism.
It's a little tough because this is a long time ago and I don't remember super crisply, but I do remember having conversations with people who thought hard about rap music, but who were older than me, who on some level couldn't hear Kanye's music because all they could hear was Kanye. All they could hear was how he presented in the world. And if you think about even like rap journalism in that era, you know, you have plenty of good stuff coming out of Vibe and The Source and XXL, but you don't have anybody who's talking to the press the way that Kanye was talking to the press. You don't have anybody who was insisting on Rolling Stone giving him 5 stars, as if any rapper in the late 90s was like, man, Rolling Stone needs to give me 5 stars. No one cared. It wasn't a thing. It wasn't on the table like that. And I think there was a little bit of internal skepticism from older heads who are kind of like, yeah, we like these kind of like post-Native Tongues kind of pop post-Native Tongue songs, but like this guy is a lot. Whereas I think if you were in your 20s, you were kind of like, man, this guy's a lot.
Yeah.
That's cool. Like, finally, someone's a lot, you know? So, and I'm wondering maybe now, and it's something I would give some thought to in retrospect, if that, I don't want to say it was a dismissal, but it was a little bit of like iciness. If a little bit of that iciness is similar to what you're describing now, that like our generation has grown up.
Yeah, and I think it happens a lot, frankly. Like, when, you know, the other rapper I thought a lot about writing the piece that I wrote for The Ringer was Eminem, right? And I feel like there was sort of a late career reckoning with Eminem on similar terms, right? Of people, you know, I think millennials trying to write about Eminem and their discomfort with him now as if the problem is that, well, you know, Eminem never grew up. And it's like, well, that's not really the problem. Eminem's a performer. It's just a persona. The problem is that you did grow up, and more than you want to admit, you kind of grew up and became your mom, right? You kind of grew up and became all the politicians who agonized about Eminem and South Park in 1999, you know? And
right. And back then you had the freedom and like low key, the ignorance not to agonize over it.
Right. And you know, it's a different conversation of whether that's all good and fair that you grew up.
Right. No value judgments in that, because I do think so much art thrives in that space where it is received by people who are not yet fully processing its implications emotionally, especially in pop music, certainly in film, video games, things like that. But I do think so much power exists in that space that I'm loath to basically be like, yeah, it's all DQ'd because kids don't know better. That's obviously not true. But I think M is a good example of someone who, yes, when 35-year-olds, except those who like wrote for the New Republic or whatever, but like, you know, but like when 35-year-olds are like, this is like potentially gross and evil, and you're like 19 and you're like, you don't get me, dad, you know, like you don't get to say that. That's my gut. On some level, you're right. Then you become 35. Now, myself, I'm still 19. So like, I can't relate to that experience, but I'm very happy to have you here to talk to me about it.
Yeah, for sure.
So are you feeling like that strain of fatigue will always be there for you when Ye comes circling back, you know, when the orbit comes back around? Because he's going to sort of like fade for a little bit and then he'll come back in 6 months or a year or 2 years or whatever. Do you think that your default entry point is going to be a little bit like deep sigh? And then maybe over time, the music reveals itself to you or you reveal yourself to the music.
No, I mean, look, in the same way that Kanye takes his album rollout seriously, I do really try to take seriously the idea, right? That, and you stress this up top, that whatever we think, right, our job is, we're writing about music, we're writing about culture. And so I never want to come to these Kanye rollouts with a sense of, oh, I'm being put upon, right? That's not, even when I don't like the music or even when I don't like the rollout, I at least am trying to look on the bright side with Kanye and take it as a challenge, right? It's a sort of general challenge for a critic that it's kind of your job to cut through all of that. It's kind of your job to, even when you feel like it's really hard to lower your guard, to do it anyway. And so I'm going to say, no, ideally, I'm not going to, in 6 months or a year, just sort of have my guard back up and roll my eyes and be exasperated. I want to think that we can all de-escalate a little bit, regardless of whether the music improves or gets worse or stays the same.
Well, always a joy to escalate and de-escalate with you.
Thank you, John. It really is.
What song off of Donda do you want to go out with?
Let's play 24. Let's play 24.
First of all, that's our show. Thank you to Dejuan Thomas. Thank you to Justin Charity. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us, podcast@nytimes.com, with all your deep, dark Donda feelings. Get on the Facebook group. Get on the Discord. Subscribe to podcasts anywhere you get your audio content, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Apple, whatever. Our producer is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. We will be back next week with The Boy. This is 24. 24. Yeah!